Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Dave.
And we're the hosts of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, where we bring you stories that delve into the science and spirit behind intriguing people doing extraordinary things.
Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. This week, it's episode 67. This week on the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, we have Montreal, Canada's Stephanie Simpson. Now, Stephanie is 35 years old. She's run Javelina 100. She's run Mad City. But most impressively, last year, she ended up gaining the golden ticket for Laz's Big Backyard in the Canadian Championships that was in Kelowna when there were another 20 other races doing backyard races all over the world. Stephanie Simpson won the Canadian event with a whopping 43 hours. That's 288 kilometers, 176 miles. Now, Stephanie, in 2 weeks from now, is going to be running Big's Backyard alongside me and 73 of her other friends. And I can't wait to run alongside of her. And hopefully she doesn't kick my butt too bad. Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, Stephanie.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Stephanie, great to meet you. As you and I were chatting before, I think I have a more French name than you do, even though you're from Quebec and I'm not. So that's sort of ironic. And I always appreciate anyone who can actually pronounce our last name because it's never easy for anyone who speaks English, but certainly French know how to say Gagnon. So we're happy for that. And I think that the beginning of these stories always, you know, for me, is like how and why, you know, and so you get to this idea of being able to run a backyard race, but it doesn't start there. We probably couldn't even imagine something like that. You know, as you grew up, you know, were you an athlete? Did you play soccer or run track or just an active kid? You know, was there a setup that you thought one day I'm going to really be out there competing for podiums?
I grew up in Quebec City. I played basketball in high school, but there was no track and field. But probably if there had been track and field, I would have tried to be on the team because I was, even at basketball, the thing I loved the more was running. Mm. When we were doing those drills, running was like the fun part of it. So I've always liked running, but I never thought in my life that I would do a race, never. I started running in my early 20s, so that's not too long ago. At first, it was because my mom was sick. So I was like, I don't know, 21 or 22. And yeah, at that moment, my mom and I weren't speaking anymore because we had like a kind of hard relationship. And I learned that she was sick in September, is it 2007? And then she gave me that book. In French, it is Comment être la fille de sa mère sans souffrir. So in English, the translation would be how to be the daughter of your mom without suffering. And I guess it explained everything about the relationship that we had. So I never asked anything about it. I just said, okay, that makes sense. I understand. We don't need to talk about it anymore. So I kind of catch up with her. And that's the time when I started running. And she passed away like, I don't know, 10 months after that. She was 45. So we were like pretty young. I have a brother and a sister that are younger. And I remember I did my first race right after that. It was like a 10K. I had no clue what I was doing. But after people were like, oh, you're good. You did 44 minutes or so, something like that. And I was like, I have no clue what I'm doing. I don't even have a watch. I think I had like a t-shirt, like with the, it didn't fit at all. So that's when I started running. And then I said, oh, I want to do more. And then I ended up like doing half marathons. And I did my first marathon in New York. Was it like, I don't know, maybe 2 years after that. And I only,
and so
yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. I just did, because I want to jump back to something that you were mentioning about that book that your mother gave you. Because it seemed like that was a bit of a turning point, and that was something that you kind of latched onto. Maybe explain to our listeners a little bit more about the teachings of that book and what you took from that.
Well, I mean, it explains the kind of relationship that you can have with your, like some daughters have with their mom. Mm-hmm. I think my mom was, she had me when I was, she was like 21 or so. I think it's like jealousy or just seeing someone achieving stuff that you didn't achieve in your life. Mm-hmm. And she was really hard on me. I remember at one point I bought a pair of jeans and I was so proud, and I showed them to her and she said, oh, they're nice. And I remember she came back the next day with the same pair of jeans, but she said, oh, mine are smaller. So that's the kind of stuff that she would do. So at some point I just said, okay, that's enough. We can't speak anymore, maybe later on in life, but for now it's too much for me. She wouldn't invite me to like family parties, Christmas and stuff like that. She would say, oh, I forgot. Yeah, you did it on purpose. So that book kind of, it was so hard to read. Even if it's a small book, it was so hard to read. I think it took me like, I don't know, 2 weeks to read it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just explained everything.
Yeah, the truth hurts, doesn't it? And you know, so when you ended up reading that book, why turn to running? Was that an outlet? Was that a way to kind of, you know, let go of some frustrations? Was it a way to calm your mind because maybe your mind was moving too quickly? Kind of explain to me why running at that point?
Well, running started when I knew she was gonna pass away. We just didn't know when. I think it was a way at first to cope with stress. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think I liked it at first. I think it was just because it felt good. And I kind of felt that I needed to run, but then, and then I started to like it. Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, right. There are some days we like running, and there's other days where it's a bit of a labor for sure. You know, maybe what's interesting, Stephanie, in that book, what you were getting the benefit of is, you know, someone who had an experience and they explain the circumstance so that you could have some clarity. You know, one of the opportunities we have in life is to make sure we never do what we don't like. You know, don't be a hypocrite, you know, when we, I don't know, make it up, you know, don't tell your child they can't have candy and the next thing you do is eat a piece of candy, you know.
Exactly.
We should do that. And I found, you know, early on, well, my mother and my kids were alive at the same time. And, you know, one day my mother called and said, you're not going to go driving in the snow, are you? And I'm like, I'm old enough to figure that out, you know, and I was like, oh, wow. Do I nag in that same way where you make someone feel uncomfortable, you know? Do you feel like so your experience wasn't what you would have liked it to have been? But I mean, a little bit of a hard question. Do you feel like you've tried to use that to your benefit so that others can not have to, you know, live through what you did?
Yeah, for sure. Because sometimes I have friends and even with their daughters, they do like some kind of stuff. I'm like, no, you shouldn't do that. She, I know how she feels. And you know, sometimes, because I remember when I was like, I don't know, 12, the only thing I wanted is just tell me that you love me.
Right.
I felt that she wasn't looking at me. So when I have friends that do have daughters, I'm like, no, you don't know how it feels. Mm. And it takes a while after that to just go beyond that. Probably if my mom then passed away, I don't know if things would have been better right now. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, commend you for that and for helping others, because there are sort of the lessons of life that we all sort of need to benefit from. Because, you know, it's, you know, the interesting part, and we're certainly not, this is not like to be a psychology show, but one mistake I think we make is we try to get children to grow up too soon. You know, you need to be a kid as long as you can. You need to sort of laugh and have fun and not have to take the burden of being an adult. And You don't need to compete for space with adults when you're a kid. Like, there is no reason for that, right? We all have our sort of position. And so to the degree that we can keep that sort of lightness in life and not sort of push too fast into growing up or taking on the burdens that others have, the better for all of us. Because then when we do get to the point where we can take it, then you can put that burden on someone, you know, but not too soon. It'd be almost like if we went downtown and asked someone who ran a 5K to go with you guys to Big's backyard, you know, you wouldn't do that. You would say, that's not responsible. Like, you're not ready for that. And there's times where we're just not ready and we need to grow into life and to running and all of that. So clearly you're doing a good job with that.
Thanks.
Yeah, so Stephanie, I interrupted you before because I wanted to jump back into something you said, you know, but you know, you were going on saying, hey, you ran your very first marathon, because I really want to hear how do you get from, you know, running a 10K and not really liking it to, you know, competing at the Biggs World Championship. So let's go back to your first marathon. So where was that and how did
New
that
York.
Go?
New York.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Was it 2009?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so 12 years ago, how did that go?
I don't know. I guess for the first one, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue. What?
Do you enjoy the New York experience?
You know what? I ran Boston too, and New York was the best.
Okay. Mm.
Well, for me, but I mean,
what did you like about that? Was it running through all the different boroughs? You know, what?
Yeah, I think so. And the crowd.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did like the crowd better at New York than Boston, but that's my.
So I gotta tell you something, Stephanie. You're gonna be very disappointed in 2 weeks because at Biggs there is zero crowd. You're running in a hillbilly.
I don't like crowds.
You're running in a hillbilly's backyard all by yourself.
It's perfect. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. It's absolutely. Perfect. So okay. So how many marathons did you run until you ran your first ultra marathon?
Two, maybe. Or three?
No, so not many. Yeah.
No, and did you ever pacing, but that's it. No.
And did you ever feel like a marathon runner, or did you always know that you wanted to go further?
I wanted to go further. If we go back just in time, I remember, I think I was in grade six. I was obsessed with G.I. Jane, the movie.
Ah.
I looked online with all the requirement that we had to do to be able to get in the Navy SEALs. I was like, this is so cool. This woman is amazing. And I was like, okay, I can do the running. I can do the push-up. Well, maybe. But I was like, okay, going underneath the water for that long. And I remember like in my grandmother's pool, I was trying to get like 2 minutes, but probably 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So it, I remember that. That was funny.
So who right now is your modern day? Who's your modern day G.I. Jane? Is it, you know, the Courtney DeWalters of the world who you're going to be running with in a couple weeks?
Yeah, that would be Courtney. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you do New York, pretty big marathon. Did you ultimately qualify for Boston?
Yeah.
So did you start to pick up some speed along the way? You must have started to get faster and feel better with the distances.
I don't think I was really fast, but I always, at first, I wanted always to go further. Like 10K wasn't enough, half marathon wasn't enough, even the marathon. But I don't think I knew that ultras exist at that time. I don't think so. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when you first heard about an ultra, did it kind of blow your mind? Of like, wow, is that even humanly possible? Or right away, were you thinking, this is something I'd like to try?
I thought it was crazy. Mm-hmm. I was like, how can people like run like for so long? And I remember my first one was after Charles was born. So maybe like not even a year after. I had that friend who said, oh, come run that 50K. It's in Montreal. It's pretty local. It's a fun race. I was like, oh, all right. So she convinced me. And I remember right after I said, no, never again. This is too much. This hurts. And then, I don't know, 2 months after I was doing an 80K and goes on. Yeah.
Sounds like a typical pattern.
So yeah. Maybe, you said never, but it's not never.
We know that, right? Whatever we say the day of or day after should be stricken from our lives.
Because, exactly.
That's not really good. But what do you think about that? Like, why longer? You know, like, what was it about longer versus faster that intrigued you?
Well, I believe that the longer it is, it's a race against yourself. You have to know yourself really well. And I think that we're all capable of far more than we think. So I think we can express that in longer races. Than shorter distance.
Yeah, and is that why maybe, you know, you're so attracted to the backyard style? For our listeners, backyard style racing is running a 4.18 mile or a 6.7 kilometer loop every hour on the hour until you can't. It's a last person standing event. And so, you know, it essentially, you know, everybody's lines up together and you drop out of the race, either when you decide not to start another lap, they call them yards, or when you don't make it back off the course in time. And so Stephanie ended up winning the Canadian Backyard Championships last year in 43 hours, which is astounding. So Stephanie, you know, let's go back to that question. You know, is it, you know, because really you're only running 6.7 kilometers. Like, I mean, when they tell you that, and a lot of our listeners, they're thinking, well, I could do that. And, you know, they always say it's easy until it's not, yeah. Right? It's easy. And then you're like, whoa. And then the next one, you're like, whoa, like this is really hard. Yeah. And so what's so intriguing about that? Is it when, you know, you are deep in your tunnel and you're like, oh, I need to make some decisions here. I need to, you know, figure things out and manage. What intrigues you about going deep into your well?
Well, I think that the mind plays a big role in the backyards, because it's a mental game, I believe. When you think you're done, well, you're done. So you have to keep thinking that it's possible and that you can do one more lap. When you stop thinking that it's possible, then that you can go further, then, well, you probably have one or two laps left, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So then when you went out to do the backyard format for the first, so you won the first time you did one, or had you done one before that?
I did one from home. Okay. Yeah, because with the COVID, I tried that first at home. I did 28, I think, something like that, from home.
Yeah. The quarantine backyard race?
No, it was the last runner standing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was right before the second one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of knew what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening with that 28 hour one? Why did you pull the plug at 28 hours?
I was the second, well, the assist. And yeah, I my hips was hurting so much. I said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was feeling good, so I was like, oh, I can go further without an injury. But I liked it.
And so tell me about, like, some of the mental strategies you have, because, you know, like, I like you, Stephanie, believe that backyard racing is all in your head. You know, the person who's going to win the event in Bell Buckle, yep, Tennessee in 2 weeks is going to be the person who it doesn't even come across in their head that they're going to quit. Like, there's no quit. It's not even an option. And so, but you see the world's best multi-day runners there, and they look good, and then they don't look good, and then they disappear. And you're like, whatever happened to Bill, or whatever happened to Susan? Because they look so fine. You know, what are your strategies to, when things get dark, because they will, how do you battle that? Where do you go?
Well, I think that you have to not try to control what you can control. Because I remember when I went to BC, I had no crew. I didn't have enough clothes. It was so cold. I put napkins in my sport bra because I was so cold and I didn't have time to change my sports bra. I even put plastic bags in my shoes. So I think you have to be more on, okay, this is what's happening. I have to find a solution. And I think that your mind has to stay focused. Okay, there's a problem. I don't feel good. It's cold, whatever. And just make a decision based on that. And don't let all those things affect you. Because that's probably why they just go like, okay, this lap doesn't work. And they just drop out of the race.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I think this is a bit of a funny comparison, but so Alex Honnold climbed up El Capitan free solo, made a movie about him. Everyone who watches him comes away with the same sort of idea, which is, well, how could you do that? You know, like, aren't you afraid? And, you know, his sort of answer is, you know, he feels very little risk. He doesn't actually think about, if you think about it too much, then yeah, you create a problem for yourself.
Exactly.
And there was one time he was climbing on Half Dome and he got into a bit of a panic attack. He was thinking, and he had to stand there like with his back against the wall to try to go back to that state of, you know, concentration. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you focus on that stuff, either that you can't control or drives the consequences of bad action, then that's what you do in effect, right? I mean, and mm-hmm. so I imagine in the backyard format that, you know, what is around you is around you. And if you think about it, then it becomes what's happening rather than just continuing to execute.
I like to say that I'm a freestyle runner. So usually I don't even know the kind of food they serve. I don't know anything. I just go there, run, and I'll figure it out along the way. Mm-hmm. And it has worked for me so far. Sometimes it mm-hmm. doesn't work, but usually it works.
Yeah. Have you ever noticed or found a tactic, Stephanie, that didn't work? That, you know, you're like, oh, hey, I tried to overconsume calories and oh, that didn't work. Or I tried a different pacing strategy and that didn't work. Or do you just kind of like play it by ear? You know, in every anything goes.
I go like with the pace and how I feel for the day. So it's mm-hmm. it's pretty much freestyle. Sometimes it mm-hmm. doesn't work. But like they say, just keep showing up and just try. If yeah, you don't try, you never know.
So we've had quite a few backyard runners on the show, you know, record holders and others. You know, there's two sort of sides of this. One is, let's say at 43, you were dependent on your assist. You know, you could have gone longer potentially. Or there's the, well, if I want to go longer, do I try and run faster and sleep a little more, or do I just sort of continually go at whatever pace I feel like? Do you have a sleep strategy at all that you try to employ?
I try to sleep. Well, I did try anything after 8, because I was getting sleepy after 8, but mm-hmm. like 3 minutes per loop, that's it. But I didn't try to go faster to run more, to sleep more. I just went with the time I had. But I remember I did like, I don't know, 2 laps with 90 seconds.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's no time for sleeping.
Yeah, no, it's hardly even any time to grab food or water. No,
nothing. Or you don't even have time to think about it. Just turn around and go back.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas my strategy is, you know, like I'll definitely have, you know, a faster, you know, split at night and then a slower split during the day. And like you, like, you know, you end up, you know, feeling like you need to sleep more at night just because that's your rhythm. Yeah. And so, you know, but it's at Biggs, you know, the daytime course is flat and fast. You know, or sorry, the nighttime course is flat and fast. The daytime is quite, you know, it's a bit slow. As well, too, it's very social out there and you get caught talking to all these really, you know, cool people from all over the world. And so, you know, I was noticing at night, it's like, okay, you get into your rhythm, because I think that after, I don't know, 36 hours, 40 hours, you know, if you wanted to run 50 or 60 or 70 hours, you know, sleep is going to be very rewarded. You know, if you get a bit more sleep early, is that something that you would consider implementing
For sure.
You know, at night? It's like, okay, you know what, no dilly-dallying, we're closing our eyes and we're trying to get an extra minute of sleep even.
Yeah, for sure. Because even when I did that 43, on the second night, I was like, I need to sleep. So I was like, I should have slept more. Like, yeah. that's something, yeah for sure I need if I want to do more than 43. Yeah.
Yeah, no question. I noticed that, you know, like with Depigs in 2019, I was, you know, I was so focused that I was going into a sleep schedule only like 3 or 4 hours into the race. And so I started sleeping and napping, but I was like, well, that's really stupid because everybody else is having fun here. And, you know, I'm not tired. I'm not going to sleep. It's not even noon yet. And so, you know, I was like, this is stupid. And I just started talking to people next to me. And, you know, come that night, that's when I fell into a sleep schedule. And then it was fine thereafter. But yeah, it was like, okay, I was taking it super seriously. And then it was like, well, that's really dumb. I think I was taking it too seriously. And the first 12 hours is just kind of, you know, you're going for a jog with new friends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Any other, you know, fueling strategies that you're considering, you know, do you eat on the course? Do you eat during the aid station. Transitions?
Yeah. Aid station. I did one backyard in July in Quebec, but I let the two last one, well, we were three, and I let the two guys just battle for the other golden ticket because I already have one. Mm-hmm. It's Eric Deshaies that got the other one. And mm-hmm. Yeah, basically what I was doing is running 1 kilometer, walking the rest of the mile. So I was doing a lot of walking and running. So basically 5 minutes and 5 minutes. So that was a good strategy for me. It gave me enough time to eat. And with all the walking, my legs were like so fresh because you end up like mm-hmm. not running that much every hour. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there's 1,001 strategies out there. We're all going to be hearing a lot about them. You know, and a lot of really great success, you know, and unfortunately, we're not going to, it doesn't sound like right now, Stephanie, that we're going to be end up getting a lot of those runners from a lot of the countries that America is not allowing into the country with the travel ban. Now, America has lifted their travel ban, but lifted it as of, I think it's November 1st. It's early November, if not November 1st. And so, unfortunately, with Bigs happening on October 16th, those countries from the many, many countries that have been limiting travel to the United States. Unfortunately, there is no way to go to get there. I haven't gotten that last email from Laz. I don't know if you have, Steph,
yeah.
Where, you know, if, I don't know if they have, Laz said he had friends in Washington, which, you know, I don't doubt it. Everybody seems to love Laz, kind of a bit of a celebrity in his right. But, you know, he said he wants to get exemptions for all these runners, but, you know, outside of our little group of ultra runners, I don't really know if anybody outside of our sport really cares enough to give exemptions during a pandemic. But how do you feel about that? How do you feel about, you know, not having, like, take the world record holder at 81 hours and not having, you know, Johan Steen or Anna Carlson there from Sweden? You know, how do you feel about, you know, having some of the world's best, even though it's going to be an exceptional field, not having some of the world's best field there to compete against?
Yeah, that I was like waiting for Laz's email every week just to mm-hmm. see what was going on. Because it's funny, because I remember the year you did the Bigs, was it 2019?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I remember I was with the kids and I was explaining to them what Bigs was. And I was like, okay, they're running 6.7 kilometers every hour. And we were following you and Courtney. And they kept asking, how's Dave? How's Courtney? And I was, it was like kind of a family thing. And then I said, you know what? One day I don't know when, I don't know how, but one day I'll be there too. But yeah, like they said, be careful what you wish for. It's right now, it's happening. So I would have rather have like all the big fields, even if there's more competition, the best runners in the world, but it's COVID. There's like so much we can do about it.
Yeah.
I'll just go there and run my best.
That's a good one. So is it Europe that's not going to be able to come over, Dave?
Well, it's many parts of Europe. There are certain countries, and I don't know how and why America picked certain countries to not travel and others that are allowed to. So we still do have a number of international runners coming. Mm. I know Katie Wright, who got fourth when I was at Biggs in 2019, from New Zealand, she's coming. But you know, the UK and Ireland, and Sweden is on the list. I think China is not, Chinese aren't allowed to travel, but the Japanese are. So I think there's there are three Japanese runners coming.
Oh, wow. To be clear, so did you say that the UK and Ireland could not come or could come?
Could not come.
No, but I heard that one person, I don't know if it's right, is coming to Canada for 14 days and then they're traveling.
I heard that.
To the US.
Who is that?
I mean, I don't know. But I mean, you need lots of vacation or time to do that.
Yeah, and that guy's committed. I mean, that I really hope for that guy he has the race of his life. Otherwise,
yeah, me too.
If he rolled his ankle on like the fifth loop, I would be so sad for him, you know?
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And I think that this whole couple of years, which is going to end up being where it is, you know, with our COVID circumstance, has certainly turned the world upside down. The good news is at least the race is going on, so that's good. And it will be still a great field. I'm glad that Canada can come. And, you know, the other question, Dave, you've been there during this time of year, you know, the weather can be slightly unstable. Chilly nights, you know, can warm up a little bit in the day, but you can get some, I don't know if we'll get some snow, but it could get some cold rain. How do you guys feel about, you know, weather as it affects the ability to get around the course and keep going?
Can it be worse than the weather we had in BC? I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
it was horrible. I mean, well, we're all in the same boat. I mean, if it's raining, if it's cold, it's the same for everyone. So, I mean, we just have to deal with it. So yeah. It's part of it.
Yeah, I think if it's terrible weather, I think instead of the winning time being, you know, distance being 80 hours, it might be 60 hours or something or other. Everybody's going to have to deal with something. And, you know, Joe, it's a great point. There's no question. It's not going to be perfect weather. Tennessee, I don't think Tennessee is ever unstable I don't think it's ever stable. I think it's always unstable. And so you always get these torrential winds and torrential downpours and who knows, they might get a foot of snow. I really don't even know. But I was surprised though, because I was told it gets really cold at night, but it really wasn't that cold at night. It was still maybe, you know, 15 degrees or 16 degrees. And so that was Celsius. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm going to just bring everything and the kitchen sink when it comes to rain jackets, when it comes to pants, and when it comes to 10 different pairs of socks. And, you know, I don't know. How do you feel about that stuff? Does it come down to being prepared?
Yeah, I'll have everything to this time because I learned from last time. I didn't have enough of everything. So yeah, I'll have enough of everything for all the weathers.
Mm-hmm.
And more than two pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, so you know, you're sort of set up here, you know what's going to happen. You know, the strategy that I always sort of find curious is this idea of the assist. You know, you can only go as far as this other person. But you guys could end up in a circumstance where there's a big group for quite some time because it's such a capable group. You know, from your experience, Stephanie, when you did the 43, was it just a couple for a long period of time, or was it a big group that took you all away?
It was a big group. I think even at 40, we were still five maybe, or four, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that did help though.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And then it comes apart fast, right? Because you're like, oh wow, where'd everyone go?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But then on the other hand, I think, Stephanie, like, you know, I know in the UK when the world record was set with John Stocker, you know, making the 81 hours, I think he and Matthew ended up running for 43 hours.
Yeah, something like that.
Just the two of them. So think about that. When you ran your 43 hours, that was just the two of them. And so, you know, I always think of it, you remember that show Deal or No Deal?
Yeah.
With like, you know, how was it, Howie Mandel show? Is that the guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have all those, you know, and when you end up seeing like 20 suitcases on the stage and you're like, one of them has $1 million. Nah, you're not going to come out with that $1 million suitcase because there's 20 cases, right? Like, you know, what's the chances? But as you start to eliminate all those suitcases, you know, if it came down to 5 suitcases and you're like, what? Like, there's still that suitcase that's got $1 million. And, you know, then you start to really, really play the game, right? But what if it came down to 3 and then 2? And I think that's where John Stocker got excited, and Matthew as well, too. And I wonder if that's something that could happen at Biggs, where it comes down to 2 people and you got that $1 million suitcase. And at Biggs, it's like a $10 million suitcase, right? And neither side is going to give an inch. So I agree with you, Stephanie, that, you know, when it comes down to 5 or 6 runners, you know, in this big group, in this mass moving forward. But there's also power in the fact, in the idea of 2. Because you're like,
the other
person can just roll an ankle and you're good, right? So you have to get through your stuff because you have to, right? That $10 million suitcase is right there. What do you think of that?
No, you're right, for sure. Yeah. Makes sense. Because even when I was alone with Matt, I was like, whoa, this is happening. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That last lap that you have to run alone, it takes forever. You're like, usually when you're winning a race, you have a few like steps and then you're winning. And now you're like, okay, I'm running 50 minutes alone. The only thing I have to do is just get to the finish line. That's it.
Right.
So it's a weird feeling, but yeah, when it comes to only 2, for sure, it gives you like, okay, it's happening. Maybe 1 more, like 2 more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it comes down to it too, like, you know, we've talked to, you know, Joe, you and I, we've talked to so many backyard winners, from all over the world. And I remember, Torbjörg, Toby, I ran with him in 2019 at Biggs. He's the greatest gentleman you'll ever meet. You're the nicest guy. And he ended up winning that same race that you ran, Stephanie, the one in Kelowna. There was a race in Sweden, and he ended up beating Anna Carlson
win.
And he said, really interestingly, he said, you know, because he's been on the opposite end with backyard racing too, when he drops out or doesn't make it back in an hour. And he said, you're so disappointed because, you know that you could have done better, right? So everybody is going to be disappointed, right? Who, you know, you drop out and you say, I can't do it. And he said he went to the fire and he stared at the fire and it told him this truth of like, Torbjörg, you should still be out there. You gave up, you quit. And he said it was a really hard pill to swallow. But then he said the harder pill to swallow was when he ended up winning the race in Sweden, the Golden Ticket event, because, you know, he was ripped off in a way, because he was having such a great day that he ended up winning, I think, with like, I forget what it was, 55 or 58 hours, but he felt that he could have done more, but he didn't have the opportunity because his assist dropped out. So he still didn't feel fulfilled. Did you not feel fulfilled at the end of Kelowna, or were you just really happy to get done this damn race?
Both. Honestly, both.
Yeah.
I think I was like so cold during the day and stuff. I was like, if I can go sleep and just get warm. Mm-hmm. But I was happy that it was over, but I was also like, I can still run. I still feel good. I mean, I'm not injured, my body's fine, I can still eat, I can still drink, everything's fine. So like there's no reason that I cannot do more. Mm-hmm. So I remember I was with Matt and he said, oh, do you think we can go up to 48? And I said, yeah, sure. And then I don't know what happened and he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, probably. And I would have loved to run like a few laps with him. Yeah. But maybe at Biggs.
Yeah, definitely at Biggs. You know, and that's one of those things, you know, I think that, you know, you're doing great. And then, you know, I don't know exactly what happened with Matt, you know, what, you know, he fell into a rut real quick and he was done. And you know what? I've been guilty of that too. And I think that I don't know of anybody who hasn't got there and then they were done. The further you run, the tighter that tightrope becomes. Did you end up finding, you know, with your 43 hour win, did you ever end up finding that 30 hours and 35 hours and 40 hours, there was a rut that you got caught in that you didn't think you were going to get out of?
I think it was like at 36, 37. I remember I was going so slow. I think on purpose. I was like, oh, I won't make it and I'll be out of it and that's it. But then I was like, no, I can still run. So I was like, just keep on pushing. And those are the laps that I did with like 90 seconds to spare. So I wanted to quit, but not. And yeah, those were the two laps that I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm. There is really this interesting dynamic about, you know, what goes through our head. And there are many times, you know, where when I was doing Ironman racing, I never really liked the swimming. And I would have loved for them to, let's have bad weather and cancel the swim and we just have to do the bike and the run. I would have been the happiest person in the world, you know. And never happened, of course. But you fantasize not having to have the responsibility to quit, right?
Like, exactly, well, yeah.
They forced me to quit. And then the interesting part about bigs is that that's what happens, right? You don't have to finish the race as you could, right? You have finished the race when someone else decides, excuse me. And that's a really interesting difference from everything else that we do.
And it's hard because you go there and there's no finish line, so you have no clue.
Yeah,
when would it stop? Even I was like booking the flight and I was like, when am I coming back? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
So you don't want to be too close because that's gonna play in my mind. Okay, my flight, I don't have time. So
I think that Lazarus Lake is an ultimate mastermind. I mean, even on his finish line, it says finish. It's like this generic inflatable, you know, thing, because he doesn't do anything, you know, big and flashy. But then with like duct tape, he tapes up this stupid sign beside it, like on the, and it says there is no, and then finish. And, you know, you have to run by that stupid sign the whole time.
Every time.
And when you're running out onto the course, and you're like, you know, and then he ends up setting up these cheerleaders. Have you guys seen the cheerleaders down there? Yeah, so they're Laz's friends. You know, I ended up writing a blog post thereafter, and I said they were young, attractive women, and it turns out they're older than we are, and they are very attractive. They're very nice people. But these two women get up there with cheerleading outfits on and pom poms, and they say a little, you know, 15-second cheer, but it's a jeer. They're like, you know, every single one of you are going to fail except for one, so might as well go sit down now. And you're like, oh God, right before every fifth hour that you go out, and you're like, at first you think it's funny, but then you're like, this is not wrong. You know, they're not wrong, right? And it's hilarious and plays on you and you laugh about it, but then you think about it later and you're like, Laz, what are you doing, man? But yet question I've been asking a lot of backyard racers is, you know, going down to bigs, you know, Stephanie, you've got a responsibility, number one, unto yourself, right? You know, I'm not gonna ask you specifically about, you know, family members and your fiance and your child and all these things that, you know, I personally feel like I've got a responsibility to show strength and courage, you know, to family members and on and so forth. I wanna make my father proud, you know, things like that, right? But I also feel an incredible responsibility to Laz, because Laz goes ahead and puts this on because he wants to sit and watch us, you know, paint this picture for him. And I think Bob Hearn, Joe, has said on a podcast, he said, you know, Laz is the ultimate poet. And he's using us as paintbrushes and paint. And we get to build something incredible in front of him. Do you feel, Stephanie, a responsibility to the Godfather himself, Lazarus Lake, of, you know, when you are ready to quit or not, and do you feel a responsibility that to him, he and Sandra, to then push forward and to give it your best and to not quit and to do more, one more lap or not make it back in time because you're going to give it your best.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. It's just an honor to be there. So yeah, for sure. I'll want to run more and not do my best, but the better, that's not the right word. I want to do my best and mm-hmm. I'll do my best for sure. Yeah. So yeah, I do have a responsibility to go there and do the more loops that I can. Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic. You know what? Dave and I set out to do this podcast. We always make the joke. There wasn't a need for another podcast. As a matter of fact, Dave, I was listening this morning and someone said there's like 1.2 million podcasts out there.
No. Wow. And I feel bad for all 1.2 or 1.9, you know, 1.9, the other ones, because we're the best one and they're not the best one. And I feel so bad for them.
Isn't that terrible?
Your podcast is really good though.
Thank you, Stephanie.
We do appreciate that. But part of what we, you know, let's see, we're all sort of the same, right? That's the way this world should live. We're born into it and we have our time here and we should respect each other, celebrate each other, take the resource that we have inside us and use it as best as we humanly possibly can. You know, the more we feel committed to each other, the better the world is, whether it's Lazarus Lake or any of us, right? Because really when we do that and we go beyond ourselves, create really a nice harmony in there. And at the same time, it's sort of fun to see what's happened with this race. You know, it's probably not going to be an Olympic race anytime soon. Yet what it's done is it's taken a group of people who are ultimately capable of a lot. And it's shown that, you know, we are all here to try and figure out almost why we're here. And this is a moment where we get to work on that. And he's facilitating it. And it's really fascinating to watch. And, you know, for me, as I think you know, I'm going to come down and crew Dave and Matt. Carpenter, mm-hmm. Or I'm crewing one, really. I know that's the way the rules work. But mm-hmm. But to, you know, put myself in a support role so that everyone can go do that. Because usually I like to be the racer, and you know, so it'll be very different. And so what I'm excited about, and you know, you can comment on, is just that we've opened up this sort of venue to something different that's really, you know, helping us more develop as people, almost more than athletes, through this process. And that can just help us, you know, broadly speaking.
Right. And you were saying before, it's not the Olympic. It's funny because today I was talking to one of my friends and I was like, no, for me, it's like going to the Olympic. It's like something you're so proud you work for. So yeah, so it's kind of like the Olympic of backyards.
Yeah.
Well, you know, to add to that, Stephanie, like I'm a massage therapist here in Calgary, Canada. And you know, I work on many members of the Olympic bobsled team, skeleton team, and on and so forth. And whenever I bring up this to them, as I'm amazed by, you know, their athletic talents and being, you know, Olympic medalists, they have a lot more questions for me because they're like, whoa, this could be the coolest thing ever. Like, how do I follow this? And so then they've told all their Olympic friends and now they're following. And I guess like turns out that you don't really know. You like to think that what you think is cool, other people think is cool. Turns out other people think this is cool. So, you know, those Olympians that we go, oh my God, I can't wait to watch those people on TV. They're watching us down in Bell Buckle, which I think is kind of cool.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even our kids, they're so impressed by that. Like I said, they were like asking about you and Courtney, and they know that race and that they know that it's important for me. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Stephanie, you touched on this before, you know, with your mom in that circumstance, which was, it was a battle, not, you know, against the finish line, but it was a battle against our insecurity. It was a battle mm-hmm. against our emotions. It was a battle against the weakness we feel because we don't have permanence. And this vision for what we think we should be, you know? And so then what I think, if I was to try and say, what when you try to find what personal fulfillment is in one's life, it's actually wrestling that demon to the ground. Because when you can, then fulfillment is really just pretty simply that you believe and love yourself such that you don't need that from anyone.
Yeah.
And then you can actually accept it from others. But when we can't, we suffer. We suffer greatly and sometimes hurt each other in the midst of that. Not because we're hurting the other, it's because of us. And so this mechanism that you guys are using, this race format, is a great pathway to personal fulfillment because you can eradicate pretty much every demon when you're out there, you know, working it like you will be. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why a lot of people have some envy for it, Dave. Because mm-hmm. they're like, oh, wow, because wouldn't I love to be able to go through that process too and find mm-hmm. what you guys are going to find, because I can't find it other ways.
So. You've been alone for a long time with yourself. And yeah. some people, they can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. kind of sad. I mean, yeah, if I you can't be alone with yourself, well, you're missing on a lot of stuff in your life.
Well, Stephanie, so, you know, let's jump into that a little bit. You know, what is one thing, and I don't mean to put you on the spot about, you know, one, you know, asking you for one thing, but what is it that you want to learn out there? You know, every lap is a potential meaningful experience. It's somewhere for you to go deeper and deeper and deeper into your well to uncover, you know, for me personally, it's a lot of insecurities. You know, that's one thing that I'm wrestling with in my life. And I need to find my own ways around that, right? You know, what are some things that you're really hoping to take out of this, outside of the win?
That's a good question. I think I want to see the limit of my mind. Because I'm someone that is pretty, like, not focused, but hard to destabilize or mm-hmm. it takes yeah. a lot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I want to see like what it takes to make Stephanie just go, okay, this is too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that that sort of, you know, I don't think there actually is a place that happens. I think we'll think that's what happens, but in fact there probably, if you get that purpose and fulfillment defined, then there's, you know, it's like this, you know, like there are good days and great days. There might be sad moments, but never a sad day. We can't sort of deny what the reason is and why we're here. And we often spend our time in those making moments into our life. Mm-hmm. And that's not really what it is.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I think it's fun to go play with that. That's the piece that you got to go do. That's why it's like you have to live a deliberate life. You have to actually mm-hmm. put yourself into the middle. You have to not end up mm-hmm. sort of wondering, you know, like, oh, I didn't even go yeah. to that.
Well, you know what? Yeah. If I can like just be an example for the kids that you can do whatever you want to do in life. Because I remember mm-hmm. like 3 years ago, I was like, I'm going to be there and then I'm there. So if it's only show them that they can do whatever they want in life, I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm. That's no, absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, being a role model for your children. I can't imagine yeah. a better thing to do in this life. And if we all as parents, you know, showed up and parented and lived intentionally, and, you know, showing our kids, you know, that they are capable and they're powerful and intelligent and give them that agency in their own lives. what better gift? And so I hope that you know that your kids are going to be up late and getting up early and watching mom crush it down there. That's going to be pretty cool.
No, it's interesting, Dave. You know, Mary Ellers, remember she rode from Canada down to Mexico on a mountain bike. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, Stephanie, listened to her episode, she's like some most unassuming person who took on, she never like really barely rode more than 15 miles and then decides by herself, bike packing, sleeping in the woods.
Wow.
From Canada to Mexico and, you know, over mountains and pouring rain. And she was on her bike 16 hours a day. And it's like, you just think like, really? Like how does this person like from just sort of like, in a sense, sitting on the couch as a normal sort of person go do that? And it's like the same kind of journey. And then, yeah, there are lots of others who can take some energy and, you know, sort of motivation out of that. So yeah, it's cool. And I think that we're going to be watching you in person, of course, cheering you on, making sure that 90 seconds doesn't turn into 2 seconds. and pushing you. So, you know, I guess knowing that in a sense, we know what the near term chasing tomorrow is, but you're still got lots of years ahead of you. You know, Dave and I, we like to sort of say, we like come chase tomorrow with us, mm-hmm. you know, so what is that for you?
I would say 2 things. I don't know if you knew, but I tried to break the 100 miles Canadian record this summer, but it didn't happen. So I want to try that again. But we also did a 105 kilometer Traversée de Charlevoix with the kids. Just there's 6, 8 and 11. So that was over 7 days, but that was incredible. It was like the coolest family trip that we did. No phone, no nothing. Just the 5 of us.
Wow.
And I think I would want like in the future do something like longer with them. And you know what? They show us that they can be so resilient. Kids, sometimes we say, oh, our kids, this is too much for us. And I remember my friends, they were like, no way, you can do that to your kids. they're gonna hate you. This is too much for them. And I was like, no, they can do that. And they were so proud. Mm. And yeah, I would want to do something else like that with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like
that. Show them what's possible. And then maybe in the next 2 weeks when, you know, they see mom crushing it at a backyard race, you know, maybe they're gonna, you know, pick up their own sport or cycling or skiing or running, you know, and they probably already have them already, but just transcend. And you know, a little bit of effort goes a long way. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about backyard racing. And that's really what I'm looking forward to watching you, Stephanie, is transcend and be an incredible role model and just crush it at Biggs. So,
thanks.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah,
so you too.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, well, I want to thank you for being on the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. And I will see you in 2 weeks down in Bell Buckle.
Absolutely. Bye. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Stephanie. Take care.
Bye.
Dave, it's fun to talk to another phenomenal Canadian ultra runner. I love Stephanie's story and how open she was with sharing it with us. That was really something cool. And I do think she has the mindset to put on an amazing performance at Biggs in a couple of weeks. I look forward actually to seeing her compete side by side with you when we're all in Tennessee. That will be something special. Okay, well, there you have it. That's a wrap for this week. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Performance Tea. You can find them on www.performancetea.com. And they've given us a discount code for any of our listeners to get 20% off their purchase. Just use Chasing20 at checkout. And we would greatly appreciate it if you could follow us on Instagram and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. As always, a huge thanks to our listeners for coming with us on this journey and chasing tomorrow with us. Thanks very much.